Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today we have Kylie with us. So Kylie, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I am a clinical counselor from British Columbia, Canada. I'm currently in Kelowna. I'm a little bit of a digital nomad, though, so I just got back from Thailand. I am a level 3 certified internal family systems counselor, which is what I'll be talking a little bit about today and how it has helped me heal complex trauma, which is what I have kind of specialized in is helping people heal trauma. I am also an Akashic Records coach, so do a lot of spiritual work as well, which I think is a key part missing from a lot of trauma treatment programs. And I'm also a TRE, or tension and trauma release exercise provider. So that is a nervous system regulation tool that, again, kind of hitting healing trauma from all different angles. We're very holistic beings. So my life has really been a passion for healing my own trauma and then being able to help other people do the same.
I love that a lot of your work is focused on, your work is focused on trauma. Why is that?
Yeah, I really don't feel like I had a choice. I feel like I came into the world experiencing a lot of trauma. Started when I was like 3 years old. There was an accusation that I had been sexually abused, and I hadn't, but there was nothing that I could do at that age. So I very much woke up at about 3, feeling like my words could destroy the world, basically, or at least my world and a lot of other people's worlds. And there was just a series of traumas after that. My mom had me when she was quite young, about 17. My dad ended up dying when I was about 4. My mom's, this is a trauma dump, but my mom's, one of her boyfriends ended up having a psychotic break. And we almost all died. So as I grew up, I knew I was going to have to figure out how to heal this. At the age of about 11, I knew I was going to go into psychology. I had found a textbook and had started to read it. And it kind of gave me hope that there was something out there that would be able to help me. I had gone to counselors when I was younger, and a lot of them made it worse or weren't helpful at all. But I didn't give up hope that there was like something out there. So I knew that when I graduated school, I would become a therapist. I thought psychologist. I've so far landed at master's. Eventually, maybe I'll do a PhD. But I was really disappointed in the training that I got formally, that it talked a lot about recognizing disorders and dysfunction, but it never talked about healing. And so you could recognize it. You knew the history, lots of names, lots of theories, but nothing that actually helped people come back to themselves. Nothing that actually got to like the root of what happens when we have to survive, and then how to come back into living again.
So what actually happens when we have to survive?
There's a lot of different things that can happen. Everybody's system is a little bit different, but we have in our nervous system, the fight or flight. So if we're, put with danger and we need to escape, our nervous system can mobilize. But a lot of times, especially when you're a child, you can't. And so it's not safe for you to escape. And so we go into a freeze state sometimes. There's a moment when I was younger when I thought I was going to die, and it was very, very peaceful. My nervous system went into a state of surrender where I just felt held, like everything was going to be okay no matter what. Now coming out of that has been hard. To, it's like you lose pieces of your soul. I have found parts of me that didn't know I made it out of that space. And so part of my healing journey has, especially with internal family systems, is understanding all of the survival mechanisms that happen, the parts of me that numb, the parts of me that dissociate, the parts that took on such responsibility for like other people and their emotions, moving into a bit of a fawn response in our nervous system where we might learn to people please or be hyper vigilant around other people's emotions so that we can survive. And all of these things really help you when you're younger. They help you get the love and the connection that you need, but they come at a cost. It often means that we get disconnected from ourselves, that we sacrifice our authenticity, our feelings, our emotions in order to get love and connection. And it's smart. It's a really smart thing to do. But when you become an adult, it can be really hard to undo some of those beliefs and those actions that helped us through these environments. And a lot of our culture sees these parts as being negative or bad. That I want to get rid of the part of me that people pleases. I want to get rid of the part of me that can't set boundaries. I want to get rid of the inner critic, and not understanding that these parts of us were developed to help us survive and that they all have really positive intentions for us. And without them, it would have been a lot worse probably than what it is. And so, kind of with IFS, it's this idea that all these parts that develop these survival strategies are really trying to help us. And that was like a big flip for me, was recognizing, not trying, like I tried everything to get rid of my numbing part. I went to Peru and did a 10-day ayahuasca thing. I did Vipassana. I did so much therapy trying to like blow it away. And then when I found IFS, I was like, oh, wait a minute. Like, I don't think I would have been able to do school without my numbing part. I wouldn't have been able to survive so much. I wouldn't have gotten to where I am in my life right now without that part. Thank you for doing what you've done. And now I have a really good relationship with that part of me. It's almost like a parent. It's always watched over me. And IFS has allowed me this ability to, it's almost like we have this like inner family inside of us, these parts that take care of us. So IFS kind of helps you turn in and get to know these aspects of ourselves instead of just understanding it from like an intellectual level.
So I actually love what you said there because I pretty much operate from the perspective in order for us to truly exit survival mode, we have to kind of let go of the person who we had to become to survive. But you raise a very interesting point. Some of these elements of ourselves. Like I was a massive people pleaser. Boundaries, what are those? Like, I now recognize that yes, they kept me safe in that moment. And while I now know differently and I can operate from a different space, if it wasn't for my people pleasing, if it wasn't for my lack of boundaries, I probably would have been worse off than I was operating from that space. So one of the things that you've mentioned so far, and I say so far because I feel like you have so much more for us, is the sacrifice of authenticity. Like that was pretty powerful. We give up who we are, to navigate the spaces that we're in. And then we spend a really long time trying to figure out exactly who we are. Like I recognize after years of abuse from teenage years, when I was in my early 20s and having to reconcile who I was absolutely terrifying for me because my identity prior to that had been tied to my relationships. So I would have described myself as someone's child. I would have described myself as someone's girlfriend slash wife. And I just absolutely didn't know who I was as a result of what I went through for decades. And then the beauty of accident survival made for me was that ability to reinvent myself. It wasn't about going back to who I was. It was deciding through radical ownership of myself who I wanted to be. So can you speak a little bit more about that part?
And that, really comes also from Gabor Mate. I don't know if you know who he is. He's a doctor from British Columbia. He's done some amazing work, some really beautiful work. And, he talks a lot about we as children, we will favor attachment over our authenticity. So if you grow up in a household where our parents, sadness or anger, when you show those certain emotions, what you notice is they take away love. And what we learn is not that sadness and anger, we learn that it's bad, but we also learn we won't get love if we show those emotions or certain behaviors. And so we will exile them, and then we start to lose disconnection from what we're feeling, or we're told that what we're feeling is too much or not okay. And so we start to develop often the belief that we are bad, that we aren't good, maybe that we're unlovable. As children will make it all about them. They can't help it, and the thing is, it's like children are narcissists, they can't help it. Everything is about them. And you look at like a 3-year-old or 5-year-old, and you can, some people have this experience of like feeling like you're responsible for how your parents are acting. But if you look at a 3 or 5-year-old on the street, could you say, oh, that child is responsible for their parents' mental health?
How no?
Yeah,
It's not even a consideration. They do not care about us.
They
I'm
often,
saying it in a jokey way, right? But no, they're not concerned about our mental health.
Well, there's generations, right? Our parents only can give what they have, and they often carry those same wounds where it wasn't safe to show anger or sadness or that they're unworthy. And then it gets passed down through generations. And I do a lot of generational healing, or noticing sometimes a lot of our beliefs and our feelings maybe didn't even start with us, that they've been inherited through our epigenetics, and we will create stories and beliefs around them inside of our own system. But the kind of coming back to the authenticity, that is a big part of like what it means to recover. When you heal trauma, you're recovering yourself. And I would say that, in IFS, our self is always there. But what happens is when we have to survive, when we pick up different strategies and tools, our self gets pushed out. Our gifts, our talents, our what makes us, our creativity, our joyfulness, our playfulness, it gets pushed away as we pick up these different tools. And as we learn that we're safe and we start to release and kind of like unwind from these protective mechanisms, what comes back in is our self. And sometimes I can feel like a choice or making space in our life for these things again. But as you know, with trauma healing, the one thing that I've noticed in my life is the more I have gone back and witnessed and loved every part of me and understood, rather than trying to change or fix, this letting go just naturally happens, and what comes back in is my authenticity, is who I am. And it's interesting. I always tell people, like, when you really love somebody in your life and they've really struggled and they've gone through a lot, can you not still see their light? Can you not still see who they really are? Even though you might watch them throughout their life figure out the pieces of who they are, but you actually saw it all along. That's like us too. We think we can hide who we really are, or that we're really gone, but the people who really love us see our light, and they see our qualities. But we might spend longer because we're kind of blended with these survival parts to actually be able to access ourself again.
I'm loving this, and I'm loving this modality of trauma healing, because it really just takes it back to self. This is more about, I mean, you still have to address the trauma in some way, but it's an intentional grace period almost through the healing process, right? Like being able, that part about being able to understand. That is major, right? Like, for me, I say there are three phases to accident survival mode: awareness, reprogramming, reinvention. That part, that understanding part, that awareness part, right? Like being able to look at ourselves and really just like, I'm not casting judgment here. I'm gracefully seeking to understand so I can give myself some grace as I heal through. And I think it's very interesting, because I know a huge part of my healing was being able to accept and forgive who I became, because I had a lot of anger towards who I became as a result of what I went through. But that understanding why I became that person was really key in my healing, because it wasn't about casting judgment. Yeah, that person wasn't the greatest. However, they kept me safe for a period. They kept me alive. They literally kept me alive. And for that, I am grateful. And now that I have the awareness, I can change it rather than shun it, feel ashamed of it, attach negative emotions to who I was.
Yeah, exactly. When I think a lot of us get scared of what acceptance means. And acceptance, I think sometimes people think that means that I'm just going to stay the way that I am, but that's not what acceptance is. It is this understanding. It's this like honoring when we can kind of turn towards our anger or our pain with this like curiosity and this desire to understand and to see. It's a bit of a paradox of change, they call it, when I can accept myself as I am, then things change. And so, but if you do it, like when the IFS, you will go inside and meet a part. And some of the questions you ask is, what is your positive intention for me? Why? Because oftentimes how a part shows up in your life, the consequences to what it's doing don't totally make sense with what it's actually trying to do. Like an inner critic often doesn't want us to feel unworthy and shame. But in its protection, it accidentally creates that. So understanding what a part's positive intention is can help bring this softening. And also asking a part, what are you afraid would happen if you couldn't do this for me? That also leads you to, an inner critic would say, if I couldn't do this for you, if I couldn't criticize you, you'd have no motivation. Like, well, what would happen if I had no motivation? Well, you get nothing done. What would happen if you get nothing done? Then you'd feel unworthy. Then you'd feel unlovable. Then you'd feel alone. So you know then that that inner critic is protecting a younger part of you that doesn't feel worthy or lovable. And then you can go and help and heal that part that's holding that wound so they no longer have to do what they're doing anymore.
That is so powerful. Like, I'm sitting processing, and I'm like, damn, it's really just, it is that acceptance, right? I I've said part of the growth process, like the journey to self as we grow, as we act in survival mode, is it's four prong. It's getting to know, like, trust and accept ourselves. And anyone in business knows the know, like, and trust factor. But I think that fourth piece is the acceptance. And the acceptance is not erasing ownership. It's not dismissing responsibility. It's just saying, I respect that this part exists and it had a role to play, even if that role is no longer valid.
Yeah, it's not helping in the way it used to. You know, it's like I want to understand.
This has been really interesting. So, I want to know a little bit more about what you do with clients, because for me, like, this modality so far, like the softness in its approach, the approach from grace and acceptance is really, I think, really key in trauma recovery. So tell us a bit more.
Yeah, you know, I think that's what makes IFS so safe if done properly, like any really powerful modality. If the person who's holding space does hasn't think about IFS is you have to do a lot of your own work. And it's one of what I love. I think it's absolutely insane that counselors don't have to go to counseling to be a counselor. And so one thing that's different with IFS is when you sign up for training is it's all experiential. So as a counselor, everybody's in the training, you have to offer your system. And so you're doing really intense work on your own parts so that when you sit with clients, you sit in a place of compassion and openness, that you get to be this mirror for them, that you can see their worth. And that helps them be able to see themselves better as well. And kind of as an IFS therapist, I'm holding space for people to develop a new relationship with their system so that their parts can connect with their self energy. So it's an experiential model. It's not like regular talk therapy. We go inside into the subconscious mind and we connect with these different aspects of ourselves, learning about their history, their age, how they picked up, what they are doing to protect us. And through this kind of like compassionate witnessing, parts can start to feel understood, which again is at that core. When we pick up these wounds, it's because nobody was there to help us. And that's the thing about trauma, it's very subjective. There's some people that can go through lots of traumatic events and come out fine because they had somebody there that listened and helped them through it and they didn't feel alone, where other people might not have that or subjectively feel like they don't have that or can't lean on that, and then they'll stay stuck often. It's really the beliefs that we create from the experiences we go through that really is trauma. That disconnection from self. So the work that I do is really helping people find a way back to themselves and to develop this compassion for their system. It's really a lens to see yourself and the world from. And then if you work with somebody, the thing is you can do this on your own already. I've written an IFS journal on Amazon, a daily parts journal, so you can do this work on your own. It's helpful to have somebody hold space sometimes so your parts can develop trust and understand what we're doing. But then you can do it on your own. You know that there's this way to be with yourself with compassion as you navigate the world.
Compassion is so key from multiple angles. You know, there's not enough compassion. There's not enough self-compassion. There's not enough compassion for others, which I think is why we are where we are, because of the lack thereof. How can our listeners connect with you?
On my website, I have it's just like kyliefeller.com. So that has a lot of different resources. I can reach me through email at info@kyliefeller.com. I have free guided exercises on Insight Timer if you're curious about IFS or connecting with your parts. I'm also a yoga nidra guide and I've linked IFS in that. It's another really beautiful way to heal trauma and kind of regulate the nervous system.
Great. So all of that information will be in the show notes. So, Kylie, before we wrap up, what is one key takeaway that you can leave with the listener?
Yeah, I'm curious, how much do I have? A couple minutes? Like, if you wanted, I could guide us through a little exercise of actually connecting to a part.
Let's do it.
Okay. So for some people, this is going to feel frustrating, and it's not going to feel great. If it doesn't feel great, don't do it. Or just notice the parts of you that get really frustrated with it. This exercise is an invitation. So just see what shows up. What I'm going to do is I'm going to invite you to maybe think of a part of you that you already have a little bit of compassion for, or you're curious about. It might be an anxious part of you that you know, or a part of you that worries all the time, or an avoidant part. Might be maybe a younger part of you in your life where you felt really not seen, but now you have a lot of compassion for that aspect of yourself. And so what I'm going to do is, whatever part it is, and even if you need to pause the recording and just think of a part that you'd like to connect with, you can do that. And I'm just going to invite you to turn your attention inward in whatever way feels right. Just noticing maybe your breath, taking a nice deep inhale through the nose into the belly, and slow exhale. And as you tune in, I just want you to invite this part forward. Maybe it's a people-pleasing part. Maybe it's a younger part of you that you have compassion for. Maybe it's the part of you that drives you forward, keeps everything organized. Whatever part it is, just seeing if you kind of sense it in around the body or in the head, maybe in your gut or shoulders, just noticing. Be noticing it can show up visually. Not everybody can visualize their parts, but sometimes. Maybe imagine them sitting across from you. As you notice them, you need to check in to see how you feel towards them. If it's anything but openness or curiosity, I want you to see if those parts would give you a little bit of space. It might feel a little bit weird to ask that, but just ask them to sit to the side, noticing if there's a shift. We don't need a lot of openness, but just a little bit, or a little bit of curiosity. I'm going to check in and see if you have any openness in your heart for this part, even just a sliver. And if you can get just a sliver of openness in your heart, I want you to invite the part to notice this. Notice this bit of openness, this bit of curiosity, to see if they can take it in. They might just want to put their hand into it and then back out and see how it feels. See if it's something they like to connect with. And if they can connect to it, just asking them, what does that feel like? If it feels good, they can take more. And if this feels like a good place to be, you can always stay here for a little bit longer, seeing if there's anything this part wants to share with you. If it feels all right, though, we're going to thank this part for connecting. If you feel any gratitude or appreciation for it, just sharing it with this part. If it feels authentic to you, you could even let them know you'll come back. And slowly starting to shift back out. Taking a nice deep inhale if that feels good. The nose into the belly. And slow exhale. Slowly shifting back into the room. So just maybe even pausing and just noticing, or even journaling if you'd like, just noticing what came up with that. I do have other exercises on Insight Timer that are a little bit slower, a little bit longer, that kind of guide you through that experience. And if you're curious about IFS or even learning IFS, feel free to reach out to me.
Thank you so much, Kylie, for that. That was beautiful. I've done similar exercises in my healing journey, particularly around some of the narratives that I've held. And having that conversation with those pieces and those memories is actually really helpful, of to letting things go, from my experience. So thank you so much for that. Obviously, if you want to learn more, connect with Kylie. And I just want to remind you, listeners, that you were not built to break. You are damn sure not built just to survive, disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. Thank you for listening to this episode, and we will see you next week.